This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. You can subscribe to the app on Apple and Android. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.
Tom Latcham live from the Fringe on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome to FUBAR Radio live from the Edinburgh Fringe. I hope you've been enjoying our live shows. We've been podcasting them all month. We've had some absolute crackers and now we're into the last leg, aka the reserves. My name is Tom Latcham. And this is the first of two shows I'll be hosting up. Hosting up here. So thanks for joining me. Regular listeners will know that I present the Tuesday morning show where I have a natter about the news and interview interesting guests. And this is going to be a bit like that, only lighter on the news and heavier on the guests, because we've got some fantastic guests coming up. But there has been one story in the paper that piqued my interest today. You'll have seen the coverage of the aeroplane crash at the Shoreham Air Show this weekend, which killed 20 people. It's an awful, horrible tragedy. Now, you might be wondering how I'm going to make this funny. Step forward, Lewis McDonald. In a Facebook post after the terrible accident, the never-knowingly sensitive Mr. McDonald demanded a refund on the £18 tickets, saying he did not get a full day's worth out of this tragedy. Wow. All I can say is I hope he's not in today or he's going to be really pissed off about the value for money. Well, only joking, we have got a great guest for you today. We've got top TV comic Mark Watson. He's going to be talking about his farewell performance of the hit show Flaws. We've also got one of the rising stars of comedy writing and performing. It's Brett Goldstein. He's Scottish and he's angry. It's slam poet Elvis McGonagall. He's in the house today. And who knows which one of John McKeever's brilliant comedy characters is going to turn up. But before we start, you may have seen in the papers as well today, the joke of the Fringe has just been announced. It's all over the papers. The award has gone to Darren Walsh, the 39-year-old whose show Punderbolt is at the Pleasance, took first place in the vote by TV channel Dave. The winning joke was, what do you think about this, guys? I just deleted all the German names off my phone. It's hands-free. Stuart Francis came second. Kim Kardashian is saddled with a huge ass. But enough about Kanye West. Better? No, not particularly clever, it's all right. And Adam Hess was third with, surely every car is a people carrier. Yeah, okay, right. Most interestingly, perhaps, and probably actually the funniest, was a child placed in the top 10 for the first time. And she came in 10th place, but actually I think she probably should have won. It was Grace the Child who said, they're always telling me to live my dreams, but I don't want to be naked in an exam I haven't revised for. That's all right for a 12-year-old. I mean, she probably should be revising, precocious little shit, but anyway. Right, I'll be asking my comedy guests about this award if they were pissed off not to make it onto the top 10, and in true stand-up fashion, if they hate everybody who was. But let's get on to the first guest. As I said, if it's funny on telly, chances are Mark Watson's probably been in it. The comedian's a Fringe veteran, having done an Edinburgh Fringe pretty much every year, I think, for the last decade. However, this year he's decided that sounded like way too much like hard work. I totally get that. So instead, he's only doing two dates of last year's show, Flaws, at the massive Pleasance Grand this Friday and Saturday, August 28th and 29th. Mark Watson, come on down. I don't mind, mate. I mean, sit next to me if you want. We can have a little cuddle. Speaking of
that, I'll sit next to you. I don't think it necessarily follows that we'll cuddle.
Well, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. It's too early to say, isn't it?
How are you, my friend?
I'm all right, thanks, yeah.
Well, that's good. I mean, what I've been asking people to do is, or what I'm going to ask people to do, rather, is when they come on, so anyone who's coming on stage, maybe have a think about this. Can you sum up your Fringe in a headline, given that I do news?
Oh, an actual newspaper style.
A newspaper headline, yeah.
Well, I mean, I've only, like you said, I've done two.
Just arrived.
Doing two shows. I'm doing a work in progress as well, and I'm doing some other bits and pieces. I've been here a week. But yeah, the headline would probably dwell on the fact that I'm some sort of I'm skimping on the work this year, and my name is Watson, which says all sorts of pun options.
Oh, yeah.
So perhaps the headline would be something like "What's on?" Not as much as most years, or something. It would be an opinion piece about how I've got lazy.
Very good,
thanks. Not too bad.
And that was off. That was off the cuff as well.
It was off the cuff
for that. No, I mean, it's like you because you should be a comedian.
I really should. Yeah, but it's just it's a dying art form.
There's no money in it.
To be fair, that wasn't as impressive as it looked, because although it was ad lib, I should be aware that my name is Watson by now.
That is true.
And it's a short step from there to thinking of puns about it. Yeah,
also
yeah, yeah. If by now I used to have a when I was a student, I used to have a column in the student newspaper called Mark What's On, where I just previewed like plays and things that were coming up in the university, and I purely did that because the editor thought it was hilarious.
Career high, really.
Yeah, and I did it for the whole three years I was at university, and in my last week, someone that I'd been friends with all that time suddenly said, "Oh, Mark What's On?"
So this year you're coming up. It's your you're performing Floors again, which I came to see last year. It was fantastic. It really is good. I don't know. Is there even any tickets left for this year?
Yeah. Now it'd be good here if I like played it cool and said, "Oh, you might just about get one." But yeah, because of the size of the room, there's around 300 left.
Right.
Yeah.
So people should go if they're in Edinburgh.
Well, not,
good.
Not should go. People must go
must
to help
go.
Me. Yeah, yeah.
Everyone's going.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's to the ground is that enormous barn in the Pleasance Courtyard. And I wanted to finish the whole. Like you said, I started doing the show this time last year. I've toured it almost without ceasing since then. So this will be a sort of two farewell shows. So it's a fun idea to do it in a huge venue, but it's also frightening.
Yeah. And for anyone who doesn't know what Floors is, why don't you explain? Because it's manic.
It's basically a massive catalogue of my personality defects and the way that they've affected my life. But to be honest, if you look around the Fringe, so is nearly every other show. I don't know why I ever thought that my own flaws would be an original idea.
Yours, I mean, probably, given other, you know, compared to other comedians, your flaws are fairly minor, I would have thought.
Yeah, but actually I've noticed a lot of people's shows this year are about my flaws, which is really mean.
But it was so successful, they want to jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah, the way to talk about Mark Watson's inadequacies is obviously hot these days. Yeah.
So what flaws do you talk about that you have?
Well, a fair bit of the show is about drinking, negativity, self-criticism.
And what are your flaws?
Yeah. Oh, I'm a heroin addict.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, also nervous laughter there. I'm definitely... I'm not a heroin addict because I don't really like injections and stuff, and I think that's the main way people do it, isn't it? Yeah. I've seen some of these Scottish films. Yeah.
Well, we'll be able to ask Brett Goldstein because he in a minute he talks about doing heroin apparently when he was at college. And never as rock and roll as that, Mark.
No, this is the thing.
You just wrote a column called Mark What's On.
Yes.
that was as rock and roll as it got.
All other people were getting smacked up. That was what I did. Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. It is true that although my show is, by my standards, is quite sort of dark, but as you say, on the continuum of the stuff that comedians have done with their lives, I haven't done quite as bad stuff as other people. Mm. So I have to either lie or just find other stuff to talk about.
You talk in your press release about Watson finds humans, despite our lack of perfection and poor decision-making, pretty spectacular.
Yes, I don't think I wrote that press release.
Well, it's a good one.
Well, it's true. I do think that the more I go on and the more... jaded and old I get, I still don't lose my sense of wonder at the stuff people get up to. It is absolutely amazing. I think that humans are pretty amazing. I don't mean that in a sort of starry-eyed way. Like humanity is terrible.
Look, my favourite story, if you're talking about how humans are spectacular, is there was a guy who once was going for a piss in a Glasgow toilet at Wetherspoons, and basically went to the bar and went, "I'm not being funny. That urinal's just blinked at me." And so they went into the back door behind the toilet, and there was a man ran past them covered in piss, and he'd basically got rid of the
where is this going
got rid of the got rid of the masonry around the behind the urinal and put a chin rest in so he could basically be pissed on. There was also there was also a fucking scuba thing as well, so he could breathe.
Health and safety suggests. if you're going to peer into your urinals, at least make sure you've got the right equipment.
Well, exactly. You want to enjoy the experience, not die. But I mean,
yeah, there you go. That's a good example.
Humans are amazing, and like all human life is here. Do you know what I mean? That's like,
yeah, I think that humans never stop being a source of fascination, really. And that, as has been well documented, the bad ways that humans live, or the ways in which people fail, are often the.
I heard
the
that bloke's headline in the Pleasance Grand next year.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's done very well.
That's
out of
his
it.
Flaws.
Yeah. Well, in fact, he's nominated for the award, I think. Yeah.
Well, talking of the award, I was going to ask you. I mean, what do you make of these awards for, say, best joke? They don't fit every comedian, do they?
They don't. And also, I mean, I've never been a person to do sort of one-liners or to have jokes. Really, it's not my thing. But last year, I did have one of my jokes in this, like number 8 or something, in this Dave lineup for the first time I've ever had a joke worthy of actually sort of quoting and stuff. And it was a weird experience because for a start the joke gets like stenciled up all over the pavements and stuff, like Dave plaster everywhere, so then in the show the joke loses some of its potency because people have heard it
or read it
or it's been listed in newspapers. But I think the main problem with it is that you saw them when you read out the jokes that basically hardly any of them ready to laugh, because out of the context of a show, like I've seen Adam Hess's show, and it's jokes about, like, well, every car people carry, it's just as quick as that, and you're swept along, it's really funny. But if you read it out in isolation, so I think the danger is that the sort of people that don't come to the Fringe at home looking through these and they think, oh, so this list is supposedly the 10 funniest things in the whole
of probably why the Kim Kardashian joke came second, because actually, well, it's a pretty obvious gag,
but at least it's a quotable joke that people can
say. People love Kim Kardashian and Kanye West.
People understand the idea of it, but yeah, I think it is, it's, I don't I mean, our Dave do a lot of good stuff for comedy, but I think it's just a bit of a reductive. It's one thing to have awards for a whole show, but the idea of people that haven't even seen any of these shows just like briefly scanning this list of jokes and being like, right, is that the best they've got to offer? You know, because there's such a richness of comedy here. So the idea of having just 10 one-liners as a sort of, it wouldn't matter, except that when you have something as convenient as the top 10 jokes of the Fringe, suddenly that is everywhere. So it allows people to have a pretty simple view of it.
So the answer is yes, Mark Watson is very pissed off for not being on the list.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, this year I would have done well to get on the list because I haven't cracked any jokes yet. Yeah.
You have your work in progress.
There's the work in progress.
Not very good then, the work in progress.
That's rubbish. That's why it's... we all know what the phrase work in progress means.
And you talk about your flaws. Is there anything that you wouldn't put in a show?
Yeah, there's a fair few. I try not to talk too much about my family or about real people in my life. No, I'd not say that I don't dwell on it, but as a lot of comedians do, I do talk about my kids. You sort of can't get away from it, really, because it's such a big subject in your life. But I try not to talk too much about stuff which intrude on not just my family, friends and stuff. I try to kind of, all of us are in the habit of like turning our everyday lives into comedy, but I try to make sure no one is too screwed over by me doing that.
You are a nice man, aren't you? I'd get that.
It's one of the things that have held me back as a comedian. Yeah.
Well, so we'll probably get our next guest on. Stick with us, Mark. So now we have up an award-winning Scottish poet, stand-up comic and former Poetry Slam world champion, because apparently that is a thing. His new show, Country Bile, has what is possibly the most amusing, if deranged, biography in The Fringe. It says, Elvis emerges from his godforsaken rural idyll at the Graceland Caravan Park to take aim at this septic isle, land of robber barons and food banks, of Kirsty Allsop cupcakery and dead badgers, downtrodden Abbey PLC, starring polo-playing oligarchs and zero-hour serfs. What's going on, and why has Benedict Cumberbatch swinging from the chandeliers in a Spider-Man onesie? Find out as Elvis rises up from his revolting armchair to kick against the pricks. He's more socialist, this is mine now, he's more socialist than Jeremy Corbyn's left bollock. He's Elvis McConaghy. There you go. Did some fake applause there. We don't need it. We've got loads of people in today. It's fantastic. Hello, Elvis.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
That's quite a description. You sound angry.
Yes, livid.
And that's it. Thanks for coming, Elvis.
Nice to meet you, mate.
It's good to have you.
Just checking you're still angry.
So, I mean, that description is quite wide-ranging, but I think it gives us an idea of what you talk about in your show. What does your show entail beyond that?
Well, that was written before, as is the case, you have to get the blurb in, so I was just covering lots of bases.
Right.
And then we would see what would emerge. Essentially, what's happening is capitalism is crushed by iambic pentameter by a man in a yurt. So that's how the revolution will not start with Molotov cocktails, obviously.
It's or Jeremy Corbyn.
Or Jeremy Corbyn, it's rhymes. I'm actually thinking of changing the show because the audiences have been pretty good, but there is room for a few more in the yurt, to be let's be honest. So we're changing it from Country Bile to Jeremy Corbyn performs the military tattoo.
That'll work.
In a yurt. And that's going to pull, that's a big demographic that'll pull in.
Corbyn is selling a lot of tickets at the moment.
Yes.
So, I mean, you should actually get in touch with Jeremy Corbyn, perhaps, and ask if you could be his, I don't know, poet laureate or whatever. Jeremy.
Weirdly, I'm booked to do a gig in September up in East Anglia. It's the Burston Strike School rally thing. And the running order was done months ago. I'm sure it's going to be changed now because I'm following somebody called Jeremy Corbyn. So that'll just he'll have gone and there'll be a field of emptiness.
Now you'll be like, you'll warm him up. You'll be like Jeremy Corbyn's fluffer. Jeremy Corbyn's left wing fluffer.
Fine,
delighted.
Yeah.
And maybe get a quote off him as well, and then you can put that on all your flyers.
And then I'm sorted, really.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I mean, what does your show? I mean, it sounds like you host an attack of things from politics to popular culture. Yes. Is that fair to say?
Yes. It's broadly, you know, it's an era of political satire and gratuitous celebrity bashing, really. There's everything I'm pissed off
about. That sounds brilliant.
Yeah. There you go.
It's about time someone had a go at Kirsty Allsop's cupcakes.
Yeah, exactly.
She's got away with it for too long.
And you, actually, because I've been asking it, can you sum up your Fringe in a headline?
McGonagall's a more difficult surname to
there's not much punning to be had.
McGonagall destroys government with doggerel.
I think you should probably use Elvis. I think there's probably more punning.
There is probably a lot more punning, which is not springing to mind at the moment.
No, I'm working on it. I'm thinking about it, surely.
And you're described as an armchair revolutionary.
Yes.
What's that?
Well, you know, I just shout about things, but I don't really get off the sofa, you know. Go through an awful lot of television sets, throwing things at them, but don't really leave the front door, you know.
Well, you're very political in your poetry. Have you always been political?
No. I was completely disinterested up to... I tell you when it all started, it was the Iraq thing, the Iraq war, and I was just, you know, being livid on the armchair, and then I started writing some stuff, and it all came pouring out then. Mm. I was getting...
Were you a poet before that?
I'd written stuff, but I hadn't got up and performed it or done anything with it.
So if one good thing did come out of the Iraq war...
This is it.
By the way,
I interviewed Andy Burnham on my show the other week, and he said the Iraq war was his biggest ever regret. So I don't know if you mean... He obviously doesn't mean you. I think he probably likes you.
I've never come across Mr. Burnham at all, really.
Yes, you're very fortunate. So the current political climate, because obviously since then...
Yeah.
There's been no end of things for a left-wing firebrand poet to attack. The current political regime in this country and system must be rich pickings for you.
It is, really. But it was for ages, because I was never a fan of Blair. I'm not a fan of Tony Blair at all. So, I mean, I've been ranting and angry for a long time.
You've been livid for many years
now. It's bloody exhausting, quite frankly. Yeah. Need a wee lie down.
But again, you know, Tony Blair to thank for your career. So
again, you know, silver lining, isn't it?
Yeah. He may have killed hundreds of thousands of people around the world,
but
you made some money. Why is poetry of your kind always left wing? I mean, I was talking about this with my girlfriend the other day, and I mean, you know, you never get posh, rich right wingers sitting in their mansions kicking against the state, do you?
You don't really. There's probably room for an Adolf Lord Tennyson out there somewhere, isn't there? Actually, that's a good idea. Maybe we'll go away and create a wee character.
Well, they're doing Nigel Farage a musical.
I didn't know that.
I haven't been, but they are doing Nigel Farage a musical, so that, you know, you could maybe just tag on with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I you know, poets are fey sensitive creatures. You're not going to find a... hopefully you're not going to find a right wing, but I don't know. I've never come across.
Well, our right wing is just less creative.
Obviously. Yeah, that's all I can say about that.
And how do you feel about Jeremy Corbyn and the rise of Jeremy Corbyn? Because obviously you're a very left wing man.
Yeah, I find it really exciting. It's fantastic, particularly just the sheer panic in the ranks of the Blairites is highly entertaining. And it is actually. I finished this set with a positive poem. Which it's not about Corbyn as such, but there's a wee bit of hope in the air, a bit of a sea change going on.
What do you think, Mark? You're not particularly political in your comedy, are you? It's much more
not at all personal.
Largely
because I feel like I'm the best qualified person to talk about myself, whereas with politics there's always someone that has better jokes about it and knows more. I did vote Labour at the election, but that's because I thought we were all doing it.
Yeah.
And turns out it was just me in the end. So
I agree, unfortunately.
The Corbyn thing is fascinating, and if he does become Labour leader, it will be... I don't imagine that the election will be won by... what would then be a 70-year-old.
Can you imagine
Marxist,
him going up against David Cameron at Prime Minister's Question
That's
time?
The thing.
I mean, Jesus Christ.
I don't think it matters whether he can win the general election. I think it'd just be brilliant fun if he becomes the... And also, as Elvis says, it will force the... it's been very odd watching the Labour Party as this panic and people... criticise him for trying to infiltrate the Labour Party.
Heaven forbid some people from the left might join Labour and vote for someone. You know what I mean?
Odd to see Labour supporters turning against someone for trying to push the Labour Party to the left. If you think if it means anything, it.
Mark Steele wrote a great column in the Independent. You know, just sort of saying, "Oh, any other company that had hundreds of people, 100,000 of people joining up to pay for their services and get involved with, you know, that company would be delighted."
They're trying to get rid of them.
Yeah, young people as well, who are the future of the country, and they go, "No, can't have this. This is null and void."
Yeah, it makes you realise to what extent the political spectrum has narrowed. Basically, the Labour Party is panicking about the idea that it might have to represent a left wing position. So I think it's great. I think the Corbyn thing has been. And if he doesn't win now, it will look fishy, I think. Mm. I think the only way he can not win now is some sort of jiggery pokery, which would probably kill Labour off more surely than if he did, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I hope it happens. And as you say, the idea of him against Cameron is fantastic, especially if it did become a full-on fight. Because Corbyn, although old, is quite sort of rangy, and I think he could take Cam. He's lean. He's been training for 20 years to punch Cam in the face.
When he rips that shirt off and gets down to his vest.
Yeah, and he's such an unusual potential leader of a party. You wouldn't put it past him to just make Prime Minister's question time. You can imagine him whacking Burnham one if it came to it.
There's a beautiful cartoon in The Guardian and the magazine at the weekend. I can't remember the guy's name, but it was envisaging Donald Trump as president meeting Corbyn. Mm. And Corbyn, there's just this one caption. And Jeremy Corbyn says, "I've made you jam." Trump going, "What was that?"
Well, I mean, you say, can you imagine him going up against David Cameron? Can you imagine him meeting Putin? I mean, Jesus Christ, the man wrestles tigers half naked. I mean, Jeremy Corbyn, I don't know, the scariest thing he's done is, you know.
It's hard to imagine Corbyn and Putin finding much to talk about, I think it's fair to say, yeah. Normally they do stuff like walk around a ranch and play golf, the Americans, certainly, but I think Trump and Corbyn would be sitting awkwardly after a few minutes. Yeah.
Right, we should probably get our next guest on, moving on with the show. You guys stay here for, I think you can stay for about 10 more minutes on you, and then you've got to shoot off to your various
what time is
appointments.
No, we're all right. Yeah. All right.
Okay. Yeah, well, just give me a shout and give me a just throw down your mic and fuck off. You know.
Yeah, I might just. I was thinking about doing that anyway. Yeah.
So my next guest is possibly best known for his role in Ricky Gervais's dramedy Derek, but I doubt that will be for long. Because aside from acting, he also writes films and TV shows and performs stand-up, and his profile is growing all the time. He's going to be massive. He's here in Edinburgh doing his show about drugs, sex, and fetishes in the desert that his mum wouldn't want to see. But we do. Brett Goldstein, come on down. Hello, my friends.
Oh, it's this guy. I'm fucking off.
How are you, mate?
All right, how are you?
I'm all right. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. It.
No, it's thank you.
Thanks.
Hello. Thanks to all of you out there.
Yeah.
Brett, can you sum up, as I've asked these two men to do, can you sum up your Fringe in a headline?
Goldstein bangs on about Mark Watson's flaws for an hour.
See, I told you, and it works.
Gets number 8 in the Dave Joke of the Year Awards. So tell us about your Edinburgh show this year.
It's a show, it started because the last show I did, after I did it, I'd worked so hard in it, and I'd spent like 2 years in it, and at the end of it, my mum said to me, I heard your show went well, and I went, oh, thanks, and she went, what's it for?
And what, start asking us that, for Christ's sake.
And then
and what was it for?
Well, I mean, that was the then. That plunged me into fucking existential despair.
What's it for is the most crushing thing you can ask a comedian. I don't know, I'm just trying to live my life.
And she followed it up with, well, what's it for other than to make money? I went, I lost shitloads.
Yeah, it's not for that.
It isn't for that. So the show sort of came from me kind of looking for an answer to that. And I ended up, and the show talks about drugs, and it takes a detour into sex criminals, but that isn't, I'm not involved in that bit. And,
Mum.
And then I ended up last year, instead of doing Edinburgh, which I normally do, I went to the Burning Man Festival, because everyone told me, oh, that's where you'll find answers.
And did you?
I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but...
No.
I mean, I found out an answer. There is an answer at the end of the show.
Okay.
Interesting.
Well, you've described this show as another one your mum shouldn't see.
Yeah, definitely not.
Sex and drugs, is that fair to say? I mean, I haven't seen it, unfortunately, because I only got up here yesterday, but I would love to.
There's a big section about the producers.
And they said there's stuff about you doing drugs at college and stuff like that. Is that correct?
There's a story. I mean, you sort of spoilt it, which is a shame.
Shit.
There's a story where I accidentally ate heroin.
We've all done it.
Yeah.
A large chunk of heroin. And
what did you think it was?
Well, I mean, it's not like I'm that innocent. I did think it was ecstasy, but it's not like a purely innocent story.
Put it in a sandwich.
That would be really hectic.
There had to be some cheese, and it all went
blurry. I love cheese, man. Yeah. This is fucking delicious.
I get it.
Strange deli, that was.
I get why Blur are obsessed with cheese now. So, I did heroin by mistake.
Right.
But it's great. I mean, it's really great.
That's what they say.
They do. They believe the hype.
Kids do heroin.
Yeah, it's not got those good reviews for nothing.
Believe the hype. But obviously, you know, I mean, don't start it. That's not what the show's about. What was the question?
Don't want my mum
to listen to this radio show either. Okay. So
what is this covered. Radio show for, Brett?
That's covered. What is it? Yeah. What is FUBAR for?
Is it easy to get a ticket to Burning Man? Is it the sort of thing, is it like Glastonbury or something where you
have
to,
yeah, I mean,
you can just go?
Yeah, yeah. It's not like an I think you just have to get a ticket early. It's not like you don't have to go through an interview process.
I've always fancied it. Well, I've always liked the idea of it. But like you say, we're always you're always here, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. Have a go. I mean, I don't know.
Well, you could have done it this year. You're not here.
Yeah, no, I know. I suppose it starts, really.
But you're obviously, but you're now a parent of two, right? So
yeah, I hear Burning Man is quite a kid-friendly environment. Yeah,
I assume they just don't eat
there
cheese.
Are kids there.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, it must be. Yeah.
Every time you see a kid there, you think, why the fuck have you brought kids here?
Yeah, but people think that about me quite a lot.
Am I allowed to swear? I keep swearing. I'm so
sorry. Yeah, I forgot that until he started doing it. Okay.
Yeah, please do. I mean, the boss of Fubar will be delighted. You could drop
he wants more of it.
Yeah, please do. Last year, you looked at online porn. I mean, are you deliberately trying to piss your mum off?
No, I just like, look, the thing is, I like to do stand-up where you sort of do things, the difficult things. I want to talk about the stuff that's difficult to talk about. That is what I'm drawn to, I guess. And I do think stand-up's one of the only places, maybe, and poetry, I don't know a lot about it, but it's one live stuff, live chat is one of the only places where you have a space, where you have an hour, where you can properly explore something that may be a difficult subject and may require nuance and context and stuff. It's like the exact opposite of Twitter.
Or the Joke of the Year Award.
Or the joke, exactly like that.
Yeah.
So it's very easy for someone to say, oh, I'm anti-porn or I'm this, but porn is a very complicated subject. So if you can do an hour on it and hopefully make it funny, that's interesting to me.
And Elvis, you do an hour?
Yes.
And is it all poetry?
No. That's why we call it stand-up poetry, so there's some stand-up.
That's what poetry slam is it? No.
No, a poetry slam is poets competing against each other. You usually have about 3 minutes on the mic.
Strip to the waist?
If you feel like that, if that's your bag. Yeah. And you get awarded points. It's absurd, really, because it's like comparing the two poets, like comparing a piece of cheese with a piece
of string.
It's like
a really middle-class 8 Mile.
That's pretty much it, actually, yes. That's a pretty accurate summary. Yeah. It's a good thing.
8 miles, but you're driving it in a car.
Yeah. And so what sort of stuff do you do? Because all the stuff I've seen of you has been poetry.
Yeah.
So,
but if you did, well, you can do 60 minutes of verse. But I mean, because the poetry bits, even though it's comic stuff, you know, it's written, it's a different texture, so it's quite densely written. So you need to break that up, break up the rhythm and do other stuff in between.
And as Brett says about how you can have a journey and explore things, do you have a story arc? I imagine that
there is a sort of
some sort of
vague arc nailed onto that. Yes, we're going to explore moving to the country is the sort of prism through which I just carry on being angry about stuff. Really, yeah.
Okay. I liked when you said, you know, and I end with a positive. I mean, it's not really, I thought you were going to say, I mean, I don't mean it, but you've got to leave on a high. You got to leave on a high.
People like that shit. Yeah.
Not like Requiem for a Dream. Yeah. Like the sort of comedy version of that where you're like, oh man, I just want to kill myself.
Yeah, you're waiting a long time for happy endings to that one. Yeah.
No, it's all right. We all walk out with a spring in our step.
And so, yeah, last year you did look at Brett. You did look at online porn.
Yes.
What did you discover? You did a lot of research, I imagine.
There was a lot of research. Thank you. We've all done a lot of research. It's an epidemic. In the end, I mean, look, this is my point. It's difficult to sum up in one line. Mm. But in the end, I think it's really bad for us. I think it doesn't do anyone any favours. And it's it's a very interesting thing because I think that it is a sort of addiction that has taken over pretty much everyone. It's kind of unspoken, but it's so prevalent everywhere and everyone's sort of doing it. And the effect that it may be having on, we're getting a note saying, stop talking about this now.
The effect. Cut the porn.
I want to see the secret note.
It just says that we're going.
Oh, yeah, going. Apparently. Notes. Well, let's talk about online porn in a minute.
Okay, right.
Elvis McGonagall.
Yes.
Mark Watson, you both have to go. Yeah. Where are your shows and when and where can they come and people come and see them if they would so wish? I mean, they have to go and see yours, Mark. You've already said.
Well,
so.
Really, that is mandatory, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of the Fringe's few mandatory shows. Yeah.
Quiet this year, isn't it, the Fringe?
Really is, yeah. Only 7 things on. Yeah. It's at the Pleasance Grand Friday and Saturday. I think it's 11:15 or something. But just show up when you can, basically. Like that is 11:15 at night.
It is 11:15. I have got it. It is 11:15.
There you go. Yeah.
That I know.
Slick bit of PR for me. I think.
And Elvis?
I am on at 1:40 at the Stand in St Andrew's Square. in a yurt.
Imminently.
Imminently, any minute now. Which Jeremy's waiting for me, Corbin. He's over there.
Getting the crowds in.
Yeah, he's pulling them. He's a good flyer, actually.
He's very patient, yeah.
Well, listen, guys, thank you so much for coming. It's been a real pleasure, and hopefully we'll paths will cross again. Yeah, good luck, guys.
It'll be the situation like this next year.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. if you can be bothered to write a new show, Mark.
I'll see what I can do, mate. I've got a lot on.
You've got to get to birdie, man. Fair.
Thank you, guys. Cheers. Thank
nice
you.
Nice to see you. Cheers, man. Good luck. Nice to see you. Take it easy.
Thank you, guys. So now I'm still with Brett, and the note says I can have 5 minutes with you.
Okay.
Just enough to fire up the laptop, isn't it?
Let's make this count.
I don't think we need 5 minutes, mate, to do this online porn thing. I mean, talking about online porn, I kind of wanted to ask those guys, but obviously they had to be ushered off and go to their things. But
yeah.
I think with the online porn, it's an interesting thing. I wrote a piece for Glamour magazine about it,
right.
About how childhood innocence with the internet no longer exists. You know when you were a kid? How old are you, Brett?
I'm older than the internet. I know.
How old are you?
I am
in your mid 30s.
Casting age.
In your mid
30s. Casting age is 24, mate.
Right. You didn't know that you didn't went technologically advanced house.
Internet didn't arrive until it was and you had to wait for a boob to appear really, really, really slowly over 12 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was almost like, guess what it is? And you go, it's a boob. I don't know how old I was when that started, like 12, 10?
Well, I wrote, the piece that I wrote was about how actually my first introduction, your first introduction to sex is finding a sort of jazz mag in
Playboy,
the bushes,
yeah.
Right? You know, and it's stuck together. You like to think it's the rain, but you don't know.
Yeah.
And you're sort of pulling it open. And you're seeing a woman. I'm not going to sort you through the entire process, but you know, you're sort of seeing a woman, a normal looking woman with normal hair, strip over sort of 14 pages, and that's about it, and that's about as sexy as it gets. Now, when you're 12, 13, 14, if you haven't seen five cock gangbang, then you're going to the wrong kind of school.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You're hanging out in the wrong woods.
Exactly. And so actually I think that it ruins sort of childhood innocence, and gives people a warped view of sex.
Completely does. And also I think it actually, I did a lot of research on this, I think actually most children are very sort of confused and quite scared because you see. Well, the big thing that I really learned that comes at the end of my show, which is sort of funny, the epidemic of porn and what it's doing to people, there is more erectile dysfunction than ever.
Really?
Everyone. I mean, I've talked to women and I've said, and this, I had a bit in my show, it was really awful because there was a girl I know who told me this. And she said, because at the beginning of the show, this girl said to me, I know how much porn a man watches when I first have sex with him. And that's at the beginning of the show, and at the end of the show, I said to her, what did you mean by that? Did you mean, because they like pull your hair and smack you about a bit? And she said, no, I mean, because they can't get it up.
Wow.
And she when she came to see the show, she brought her boyfriend, and at the beginning of the show, when I said the first bit, she went, oh, that's me. And then when I said the bit at the end, she went, oh fuck.
Are they still together?
No. I mean, that's far too much pressure every time they went to bed after that. Oh, you talk about this, do you?
But they will be both, on the plus side, they both will be thinking about you. So,
yeah, maybe that helps. You know.
You've done some, like, you really are, as I said in the intro, really are sort of a rising star of comedy writing working with Catherine Tate, who wrote a movie called Super Bob, which is about a British superhero, because there's never been a British superhero, has there? And I read an interview of you where you rang up, or you had a meeting with the Ministry of Defence
to say what
would happen if Britain did have a superhero. And how did that phone call to the MOD go?
We went there.
Weird one, this one.
The weirdest part of it is, it wasn't that weird because they've talked about it. It was like, we've been waiting for this call.
What?
and genuinely, what's weird is we're not allowed to talk about most, like it was all... We kind of had a list.
Or what?
It was all off the record,
or
but
what?
It was like, well, I don't know. Yeah, well, they're the Ministry of Defence. They're listening now. They're one of the only people listening.
Do they listen to the Ministry of Defence and to FUBAR?
They're huge fans.
Oh, fuck. But you know, like, did you sign the Official Secrets Act then?
I can't say, mate.
Because if you didn't, what I'm saying is, if you didn't, you can say whatever you like.
Look, it was an hour and a half. I have it on record. I recorded it. And it was fascinating. I mean, they really, had a lot to say on what would happen if this occurred.
There's someone's job at the MOD working out what would happen if
Superbob, he is a postman who gets struck by a meteor and suddenly has superpowers. So I guess it's the thing.
You've got to look at all the realistic things that might happen.
If they developed technology that made people super strong or whatever it is, and they could use them, what would they do? But it's always
that
informed a lot of the writing of the film, because Superbob becomes a civil servant for the Ministry of Defence, and he's sort of trapped in this bureaucratic nightmare where he has to do an awful lot of forms. And
my girlfriend works for the civil service. I wonder
how strong is she.
She's like a shot putter. I'm only joking. She's not. If she is listening to this, you're not like a shot putter, darling.
Never wrong with shot putters.
Yes.
Google them.
Google what women's shot putters.
Yeah, it's a very specific. Anyway, carry on.
But yeah, so you've worked with Ricky Gervais,
yes.
Catherine Tate.
Yes.
I mean, that's incredible. You must learn so much working with those guys.
Yeah, you do. You really do. And you know what? And I'm very lucky, and I'm very you do learn a lot, and you learn different things from each of them. Everyone works in very different ways. And there's a secret note from the MOD arriving at the table.
Don't step out of the room. A sniper will shoot you dead.
You know, so something I learned from Ricky, which is really, I was so surprised about, which is that on my very first day on Derek, we did take one, and I was all like, oh God, you know, it's such a big deal. I did take one, and he went, cut, brilliant, let's move on. And I went, what? And he went, I like that, let's move on. And I was like, do you not want other options and stuff? And he went, no, I trust the force. That felt good, it looked good. I don't want lots of choices in the edit. And you think, God, for a man with such a legacy and all the, what I would think is a lot of pressure to keep, you know, he just goes, that's good, let's go.
Or on the other hand, he's getting lazy.
Or he's incredibly lazy.
And you've also shot this documentary. We're going to bring John McKeever on in a second. But I just want to ask you about this new mockumentary-style show that you've shot, which is going to be on TV soon, I believe, called Hoff the Record.
It's been on, mate.
Oh, it's been on. Sorry, mate.
It's all right. What I was don't it? Think anyone knows.
No one noticed it.
It's been on, and we're about to make the second series
really?
As soon as I finish.
What's he like?
Edinburgh. What's David Hasselhoff? He's a lovely, lovely madman.
Yeah, lunatic, right?
He's a lovely
right?
man.
In a good way.
He's really nice, and he's a full-on workaholic. He makes all of us look like scum. Like, he works. He shoots with us all day, and then if someone asks him to do a gig, or do a gig at night. One we did a day shooting, he had a gig at night. He flew to Berlin to do a short film for some guy who'd asked him because he liked the sound of it. He was back in the morning. Like, he drinks a lot of Red Bull.
Wow.
He's fit as fuck.
Really?
Like, he's 63. He's fitter than your shot put girlfriend.
Yeah.
And like,
she's not like a shot put.
Okay.
and does he like a drink? Because I mean, in the past,
he's clean.
He's clean now.
He likes a Red Bull.
Right. He'd probably have a heart attack.
Yeah. Well, I do worry.
I used to know a guy who worked at one of the leading newspapers who basically lived on chips and Red Bull.
Really?
But he was like, he used to go and do loads of weights. So I was like, mate. You're going to die. Like, you're going to end up
is
dead.
Is he still with us?
Yes. I believe so. Hope so.
I haven't heard
otherwise. We should bring on my next guest, as we said. His show's been described as a raucous hour of comedy from a new kind of comedian. With only his voice, body and trusty clothes rack, John McKeever effortlessly morphs from persona to persona, blurring the lines between stand-up, storyteller and multiple personality disorder. I saw him last night. He's very good, if very, very weird. Welcome to the stage, John McKeever.
Look at that. Very weird.
Hello, John. Weird but fun. You know, like, weird can be good.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah? So I've been asking my guests to sum up the Fringe in a headline, because I used to work for newspapers and sometimes still do. So can you do that?
McKeever gives it his all, and it's a weird, wonderful experience.
It's more of a broadsheet headline, that one.
Yeah. But,
so tell us about your show. I mean, I've introed it and given an idea, but I think it's difficult to really give an idea of what your show is about.
It's the premise of it is John McKeever doing a wonderful showcase of his amazing characters, because John McKeever's an amazing character actor, but he can't make it for the show. So He's got his best characters and he needs someone to kind of be the go-between. So he's got his worst character, Estroff, to be the MC, and he's lucky to be doing that. So that's the kind of premise. It's Estroff who's got his ability. He's got this kind of real gift that he wants to just entertain people with, but he's not allowed to because John McKeever is a prick-os.
And you say he's your weakest character. Is he your weakest character?
I don't know. I mean, it's up to the audience to decide that. I love doing him. I love doing him. Look at that as a headline. I don't know if he's the most like me, but he's got that whole kind of innocent, kind of playful, like just making the audience laugh. And yeah, I do. He's brilliant.
And I mean, you do various characters as sort of an Aussie sci-fi star,
yeah,
who's desperate to get back on the telly. A Northern Irish
karate instructor at the dojo,
yeah, with a penchant for cheese, yeah. Not heroin. an aged war vet, a rock and roll preacher man. Yeah, the rock and roll preacher man. Yeah,
I basically threw everything at that last character just because.
Well, who is your favourite of all of those? Do you have a favourite?
Yeah, the one I enjoy the most because he's the riskiest one is V Boney, is the rock and roll born-again Christian ex-Vietnam veteran with a huge beard and a bandana and a big coat, just because I never plan anything for that character. Not to kind of ruin it, but I come out, put this big beard on, set up this board which says question time with V Boney, and I just sit on stage and I've got a track set for 4 minutes with a bell that goes off for 4 minutes, and whatever happens in that 4 minute time. And it could be 4 minutes of silence, or it could be people could start asking questions. Like last night, people were asking questions about the beard. And
I mean, you must be living on your wits at that point, and that must be great for a comedian, right?
It's intentionally risky and kind of thing. And some nights have gone really good, some nights have gone like just a bit quieter because it's like, oh, how'd you judge it? But because the show's quite audience interaction-y and it's quite
very much
fast paced, and I ask a lot of the audience, and it's what I wanted was just a little bit of time where it's just like the audience decide how this next bit plays out, as opposed to me dictating it and me being like, laugh at this.
and so John does freelancing. We're all freelancers here. Freestyling, so to speak. Are you all set routine, or do you throw in bits?
I love improvising, and I try and sort of build in little bits. I mean, the Edinburgh shows that I've done are like a culmination of sort of 2 years of stuff, so there's not a lot of freestyling in this show, but the rest of the time, gigs or whatever, love it.
So John gets people on stage,
right?
So I basically went along to the gig last night, and I was no one was in the front row, so I was ushered into the front row, and I was like, I don't think this is a good idea. He's coming on my show tomorrow. This could get really weird.
Did you know? No.
Okay. So and
I knew not to bring him up for some reason. Yeah.
I think it's just my face. a sort of look of bizarre disgust.
Oh, it's one of those.
Well, there was one point where I won't ruin it, but he does drop his pants, and he has them around his ankles, and he looked like he was about to flick them, and I was like, don't. I didn't say anything. I just wagged my finger to say, don't you dare fling those pants into my face, McKeever. And thankfully, you didn't. It would have been quite good. But I was very impressed by. They were all good sports in the audience.
Yeah, well, definitely.
Are they difficult?
Yeah, I mean, I've only had one, because all the characters have a moment where there's that you kind of go in and go, do you want to join me up on stage? Like I've got a life coach character who's this kind of really smarmy, gross, kind of very Tom Cruise and Magnolia, kind of like, all right, hey, do you want to join me up on stage? Join me up on stage? And only once has this been this older woman who's just like, no. No, and it's like there's no. It was so clear. No need to press it further. Okay, great. go on to the next one.
Well, last night you got a man on crutches up on stage and beat him to death.
Yeah. It's all part of it. Comedy.
Was he a plant?
No, it was. I thought it was brilliant. And he did so well. Like he started utilizing the crutches, and I just wasted him though. He was no trouble.
But you actually rely on people being funny in a way back to you.
Kind of. If they're really awkward and really shy, that really helps me. If they're really confident and they're really kind of like, "Ooh, I'm really funny," that really helps me as well, because you can kind of flip it and be like, "Oh yeah, great, you're funny." But it's just kind of winging it. Like, say if whatever they give you, it's a gift, really.
I read an article a while ago, or fairly recently, actually, before the Edinburgh Fringe, that was talking about heckling and how heckling, the art of heckling, was dead. Now, I don't know if this is true. Is this true? Because if it is, I'm greatly disappointed, because I used to love heckling. Yeah. I mean, I'm never going to be a stand-up comedian. It just ain't going to happen. I've tried. I've done a few gigs. I'm shit. And so heckling, you're like, you're testing me wits here. Mm. This is good fun. You know, and now I'm 33. I'm like, I can't be arsed. But is heckling
dead? You can't
dead?
Even be arsed to heckle.
I can't even be arsed to heckle.
You went from stand-up to heckle to, oh, fuck it. I'll just sit here.
Yeah, isn't that like everyone's...
I'll sit here and wag my fingers so he don't kick his pants at me.
Isn't that like
it's dead. Oh, man, this is so sad.
Maybe I'm up my heckling game.
Well, I mean, I don't want to encourage it, but...
so do you get heckled? I mean, does heckling still exist? I mean, obviously, John's show relies not on heckling, but on...
It's actively encouraged in the show, to be honest.
But what about you mean, bro? By heckling? I don't know, because people who don't do stand-up always go, oh my God, what happens when you get heckled? And you think, rarely does someone go, shit, this is shit. That's a bad heckle.
But that's a bad heckle, not for you, but also for the heckler.
Yeah, but if people sort of join in and say so, often they, and when people say they're helping, like if people say weird shit and it's positive, great. Like I'll play with it and do stuff. As long as there's an opportunity to sort of go, yes and. But if they go, you're shit and I hate you, then, you know, it's like, oh, well, just, all right then, mate.
When I was 18, I used to do that sort of thing.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I mean, I remember one guy, I went...
This is when you were an open spot heckler.
Yeah.
Professional heckler.
No, I wouldn't. I go for the people being paid. You know, I'm not a complete bastard. But there was one guy, I remember, I was 18 and drunk and an idiot, and he had all his jokes written on his hand. Now I know you all do. I mean, I know that's the thing, right? Yeah. That's the thing. I know that's a thing now. I mean, I'm...
I'm looking at him.
But I basically rinsed him for having his jokes written on his hand. I like, really was rather horrible to him, and I regret that now.
So were you a successful heckler? Were you, as in, did the audience side with you?
Yeah, I think they probably did.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's tough.
What, you were such a successful heckler that you destroyed a man's career?
Yeah. That he's, I got a show out of it. Well, I'm not here for radio presenting skills, am I? So, I mean, you know, do you like hecklers? I mean, because again, going on your wits, living on your wits, John, you love that. Again, Brett, you like to...
There's a difference between heckling, like, are you saying, doing something weird, feeling like you're actually joining in. It might be driven by like, oh, I'm funnier than this person, I'm going to rinse this guy. It could be something like that. But I think there's a difference between that and feeling compelled to express how much you hate what the person is doing. That's not heckling. That's abuse. That's something. It's not nothing pleasant can be taken from it, really.
Like, I'm all for anything that makes the night unique. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, as in, even if you fuck up or anything, that's what I do like about stand-up and why... It should always be different. Every night should be different. Even if you're kind of saying the same jokes, something should happen. You should make it unique to that audience. But you don't want that. What the unique thing was someone going, "We all hate you." That would be like, "Oh yeah, tonight."
I saw
that's
John Kearns.
That's getting unique. Okay? Yeah, every night.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw John Kearns at the Soho Theatre, and there was this guy with this lady friend right in the middle, and they were like every so often mumbling to each other, and it was happening quite a few times. And eventually, John Kearns was just like, you're all right, mate, you're all right, what's going on over there? And he was like, oh, she was just saying that she really likes you, I really don't, like this. And it was like, that kind of, oh my God. And he was like, oh God, like, you could tell it kind of
through. Got a good review.
But no, but this thing, someone in the audience was like, why don't you just leave, mate? And everyone was like, going, yeah, get out. And the whole audience turned on this guy and we kicked him out of the theater. Yeah. He got up and was like, oh, I'm walking out. And as he was leaving, he went, called it, come to everyone, went, this is the best laugh you've got all night. You're welcome.
And we were like, oh, shut up, you dickhead. Oh, that's got a good line, that. Yeah, no. I'm going to nick it.
He did all right. He did all right.
You're back in the game.
Yes, I'm going to go later and do that. And you're... oh, right, actually, hold on. I've got another note.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, right, okay. The note is, this show's been a bit cock-heavy. can we bring up a token woman? Keris Nelms.
Yay!
Hi,
Hello, Kerris.
Hello, Cox.
Thanks for joining us. Well, I mean, it wasn't deliberate. I mean, we didn't deliberately make it cock-heavy, but it just happened to be so. So we're glad that you're here to lighten the burden.
A token woman.
Exactly. How are you, Kerris? How are you getting
probably
on?
Probably got a bigger cock than you three put together, to be perfectly honest. I'm all right. Tired. And these lights are almost like the Edinburgh sunshine outside. Very hot.
Yeah. And what's your show and what have you been doing?
I've got two shows, Tom. I've got a children's show.
Right.
Sorry, ex-porn star doing a children's show. You're welcome, Edinburgh. Thank you. Bring your little shits along. honestly.
If they're listening to this, they shouldn't be.
No,
frankly,
exactly.
So.
Exactly. It was when I announced to my friends and comedian friends that I was doing a children's show, everybody was a little bit shocked. But it's going well. I'm really enjoying it. And
what's the children's show? I mean,
It's called
it's
All
not
in
the
One.
Porn bit, is it?
No. Although I do get my vagina out on some of the other shows. I've kept that. It's going to be my Saturday finale, I think, for the children's show.
CBeebies called, have they?
Yeah, well,
offering you a show.
Weirdly enough, I had a bloke come in the other day, and I made a point of pointing out that he'd walked in with no kids and made it very awkward for everybody. And he found me the next day, and he says, "Oh, I actually book for children's entertainment for loads of festivals in the UK. Thanks for making me feel really uncomfortable. Bye bye." So I reckon the festivals are calling is what he meant to say. And obviously he's going to check me out later. It's called All in One Fun, so I wear a big blue unicorn onesie. We get a couple of there he is. I'm going to do an adult version next year, I think. I get a couple of the parents on stage. One of them ends up in a pussycat onesie, normally the dad, and the woman ends up in a massive banana onesie. And then they have fun swapping over. And then the dad ends up in the banana, hopefully on the right way. And the mum ends up in the cat. And then we've got a story. The kids join in and they've got little hand puppets. And they end up leaving with edible unicorn poop. I mean, what more do you want out of a free show in Edinburgh?
Well, I can't think of anything.
Exactly. Exactly. And then I do an adult show called Kerris and Elms' Pick a Mix every night. It's a compilation show. So I get about four or five comedians down every night. They come and do 10 minutes. So basically they do 10 minutes of their comedy gold. And then if the audience thinks it's shit, they don't have to go and watch the rest of their shit hour. So I think I'm doing people of Edinburgh a service. So you're welcome again.
A real gift.
And it's a double-sided flyer. So I'm like, children's show, adult show. Oh, but not adult show in that way. Just a over 18 show, children's show, adult show, children's show. It's very good.
Did you actually used to be a porn star? You're just making that up.
Yes, no, I didn't.
Did you? What sort of stuff?
Oh, just like the sex stuff.
And did you wait? And Brett, did you wait 12 minutes for a tit to download?
Yeah, I reckon. Just, no, sorry.
You know, just your normal like midget fucking. You know, stuff.
Yeah. Mainstream shit.
Yeah. Proper. I did end up on some kind of top 10 list one time about best horror moments or something because it was a horror movie. It was a Halloween special. And I
what happened? What was the storyline?
It was I broke down outside a big stately home.
Oh yeah,
just outside Bath, as you do.
Oh
no, my big Rolls Royce has broke down. Who can help me? And knocked on this big stately home door, and the man opened the little butler opened the little. He was a little butler. Mm. Little, his name nickname was Tripod. He opened the door, and there was lots of green lights and stuff. And then I accidentally had sex with him just to try and get my way out of hell.
Just with the tripod?
Yes.
Just fell
onto nowhere else, no one else in the house? Just you and tripod?
It was just the butler. Just tripod, the butler.
I mean, that's like such a bleak house.
And it was massive. It was in the middle of nowhere.
I love that that's what you're picking up on. It's just being weird.
Has he killed everyone? Where's everyone else in there?
I have no idea. That was probably...
Where was the horror element?
There was some green lighting.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe a smoke machine.
But also the horror of where is everyone in the house? Where's...
I don't know, they probably killed Brett. I don't even want to think about that. I just wanted to have sex and get out. When you're waiting for RAC, they take ages.
Yeah,
and I thought, well, I might as well have sex while I'm here.
They call in the middle of the sex and go,
to some members,
they're
the fourth emergency service, but not for you.
Well, exactly.
It took forever.
They were like, have you got a kid with you? Have you got enough snacks? I was like,
he could have dressed up as a kid.
Yeah. I could eat something in the house, but I'm not sure. I won't have it in my mouth for that long, to be honest.
Sounds very moving.
Thank you, Brett. Thank you.
Are they called the Oscars? The little people? Was it like an actual dwarf?
Yes, his name is Jimmy. Oh, I don't really know. He was okay with midget.
How much did you get paid for that?
Too much.
Too much.
Do you know what? There's a big story behind this. Well, this is the one that I walked off afterwards because there's a big story that will come out when
if
I write
you get
my
CBB show. Well,
yes, it'll be on there. There's the darker side of the porn industry and stuff like that happened on this shoot. So there is a horrible horrible side to it.
And I don't think anyone thought it was nice.
Mm. Well, no, no, but I could have coped with it.
But
if,
it was
if
in Bath.
Yeah. It
was a spa town.
Stately home in Bath. I've never been to this stately home in the daylight. Yes. I wonder if it's quite a nice... It's probably a natural trust place.
Beautiful, yeah.
I wonder if they know what goes on at night around Halloween. When your car breaks down.
Mm. All those green lights.
Exactly.
Blimey. Blimey.
Yeah, yeah.
And so how are you enjoying the Fringe, all of you? I mean, have you been here? Have you all been here? How long have you been here, Brett? Have you been here all month?
Forever.
Do you feel like you're just about ready to go home now?
I feel like the last week you get a, hey, I love the Fringe.
Yeah, yeah.
And the first 2 weeks, I love the Fringe. And the third week, you think, I want to kill myself. That's how the Fringe works, isn't it?
Well, Tom, you said enjoyment. That word doesn't even enter into my head when describing the Fringe. No. It just... Honestly, it feels like possibly a week and a half too long. 2 weeks would be, I think, we could all cope with. When it gets to this week, we're all shattered. We're all hallucinating. we're all just drained mentally, physically.
Well, you just like
the Royal Mile smells of shit.
Just do a 2 week run then.
Well, yeah, you can, but then you don't get the people
money.
Get. Well, no, it's not that because you don't get the money whether you're up here for 3.5 weeks or 2 weeks. To be perfectly honest, I had a nursery full of kids. 50 kids I just had in my show. I made 50p. You're welcome.
You're joking.
Thanks.
Yeah, but that was their life savings.
Well, no, exactly.
They raided their piggy bank for that.
These three nursery school people have just brought in their kids for an hour for me to entertain. They're making the money. Right. The parents have probably all sent them with a fiver. Oh, you're going to that show. Here's a fiver. Put that in that woman's bucket. And the carers have just
gone.
You
know what?
Yeah, exactly. There's another show. No, it's this last week is really hard, isn't it, lads? It's really hard. I've got a 17-year-old son at home, so I find I probably like really miss him. And
how old is he? I'm
17, Brett. Okay. That was when we had sex 17 years ago.
Okay.
I haven't introduced you yet.
I saw a picture. He has massive eyebrows.
Yes, yeah. He does.
Interesting.
A massive.
Is he mine?
Yeah. I think it's you or me, or the tripod.
Oh, Jeremy Kyle. I can see that's a whole show, a whole different show. No,
I once got a fake guest on Jeremy Kyle.
Did you?
When I worked for the News of the World, yeah. Yeah, well, they filmed it and everything, but it didn't TX, unfortunately. It didn't trend. They rumbled us towards the end.
When
we were trying to test their security,
there.
You know, test whether. Yeah. And their security's pretty good as it happens. They called the police. we had to run away.
Put me on there. They probably think I was fake. It turns out I'm actually just real and fucked up.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's difficult to tell.
Yeah. How are you finding it?
I'm enjoying it. It's my first one, so I've got the new legs, and it's the second week was the hardest week, just because it's like yeah, and then second week, oh god, this is actually like destroying me slightly, and then I think it's the final run into towards the last weekend, and I've spoken to quite a few people who've done Edinburgh before, and they say it's like second week, oh shit, and then you do that last weekend, loads of people come see your show, and it's like and you convince yourself you're going to do it again the next year,
yeah,
in that last weekend.
I think what has helped it, because the newbies amongst us, what you haven't had is the relentless rain.
I was going to say I've been
quite. Well, it's coming tomorrow.
Well, one day, Tom, out of bloody however many weeks we've been here, as Brett would like be testament to, the fact is, previous years it has just relentlessly rained from morning to evening, just constantly, and you're flying, you're out in it, you're walking from gig to gig. That's what we haven't had this year, which I think has made it a little bit more easier than previous years. That one day of rain tomorrow, I can handle, because I've been basking in 25 degrees of sun on the meadows. But I think,
so that improves
without
your
the
mood.
Rain.
It's like God is heckling you when you're standing in the rain.
Yeah.
Right. Think, what is it for?
The big question is, you don't make money, you don't enjoy yourself, why do you bother?
I mean, you're like my mum, and it's a very good question.
What is this for?
I had a day off yesterday, and whilst I was crying, that was a thought that was coming to my mind. Because
you've got to have a day off to cry. Yeah.
Exactly. You're losing out on a month's wages. If you're not getting your bucket filled, you've got no money coming in at all. You're paying extortionate amounts of money for accommodation. You're along with your flyers, your advertising, all my stuff, all my props I've got for my kids' show. Yes, the question is, what the fuck are we all doing?
Surely you're doing it for that handshake you get at the end of the show from an audience member.
Terrified audience member who's just been brought up on stage and
peeling underpants off your face.
So when those 50 kids were leaving today after putting one pence in the bucket each, with sweets, with a big smile on their face. I thought, that's not what it's all about. I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to commit suicide.
They were supposed to put money in this fucking bucket.
Yes, exactly. It's a weird thing. I think when you're back in London or wherever and you're not up here, you do feel like you're missing out on something massive that's going on in Edinburgh. Mm. And when you're up here, you're thinking, fucking liars, this is not...
You know what?
bullshit.
And on that positive note, we're going to end...
I'm glad you've got the woman on. It's like, positive vibe. I fucking bought up this fucking radio show just then.
yes, well, thanks for cheering us all up. It's like Requiem for a Dream. Yeah.
It's not a surprise I'm single, is it?
We are all going to go and kill ourselves. So I want to say thank you to Mark Watson, who's got Floors this Friday and Saturday, August 28th, 29th at the Grand, Pleasance Courtyard, 11:15. Brett Goldstein, you've got Burning Man until Monday at Beneath at Pleasance Courtyard, 9:30 p.m. correct?
Yes.
Yeah. John McKeever, Multifarious until Sunday at Cowgate at 6:40, and Elvis McConaughey, Country Bowl at the Stand, St Andrew's Square until Sunday at 1:40. And you're going to have to, unfortunately...
That's right. My all-in-one fern every day at 12:20 at Hispaniola, and pick a mix, 5:45 every evening at South Cider, also called Suicide.
I'm going to come into the kids' show on my own.
Yeah, they do that now. I remember not to talk to the men that come in on their own now, because it could be a potential somebody that wants to book me for something amazing.
Exactly. Well, I hope you do get booked for CBeebies, because I'll do the story about how I used to be a porn star and I'll make some money out of it.
Thank you. It's already been done.
Anyway, I've been Tom Latcham. Hope you've enjoyed my first live FUBAR shows. Catch me again tomorrow with Rick Edwards, trans comic Sarah Franken, double act Lazy Susan, and top comic Dan Clark.
Tom Latcham live from the Fringe on FUBAR Radio. FUBAR Radio presents Ripping a New Hole into the News Agenda.
How are you, Mr. Raymond Holmes?
I think what's great about stations like your own here is that people can talk about subjects and we can get very passionate over a certain subject. Mainstream broadcasting doesn't like news to be in any way humorous. Humorous in mainstream broadcasting is, and finally, a duck got rather more than it bargained for when crossing the road today.
Every Tuesday from 10 a.m. This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. You can subscribe to the app on Apple and Android. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.